The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? I'm not crazy.
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
His brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51.
We're here.
The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to a very British version of Hysteria 51 this week.
Ben, can I have some tea and cheese muffins?
Maybe not that British, Kyle, but we are going to hit up some British folklore and spooky legends.
That is right. We are tackling said British shenanigans from the friendly confines of the lower fourth dimension, also known as Chicago. I'm your host, Brent Hand. The bots are back and seem to be behaving, so far, so we got that going for us. Across airways from me, the folklore master that I just made up himself, Mr. David Aflora. David, how goes?
So you've seen my 1980s epic adventure movie.
Folklore
Master.
Or was
it The Two Ferrets?
Oh, man. That and Beastmaster were on heavy rotation in the Hand household.
Those ferrets got around in the 80s.
Oh, they sure did, I tell you. We are here talking about a documentary about British shenanigans, like I said.
David, can you believe anyone would be foolish enough to try and make a documentary during a pandemic?
I don't know who in their right mind
Shots fired.
Would even attempt this.
Shots fired. I guess the whole behaving thing is well, that's pretty good still, I gotta say.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair. It's a fair question.
Yeah.
Because who would?
Now, granted, you started it, and then God put a blight upon this world to slow you down.
And then God himself said, hold up. I'm going to let you finish.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I mean, even in year two, this was 2021, or going into the second year of it, we had to coordinate our schedules around the state parks being closed and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had to wait for those windows where they'd open, and then they're like, oh my God, it's too much. Close it again.
Well, and at least during your whole going out and filming and everything, you guys didn't also start your own missing 411 case by going missing. So
we are not that desperate for money and attention.
Uh-oh. That sounded loaded. I like it. I like it a lot. We aren't talking about that documentary. We're talking about a new documentary, Sideworld, Haunted Forests of England. Director George Popoff is joining us to talk about this new doc, exploring a kind of this hodgepodge of everything, paranormal, folklore, hauntings, mysteries of the forests of England specifically.
Yeah, it's almost like what we're doing in the desert, you know? There's kinds of stuff that
that's
about.
When he reached out, I was like, yeah, this is kind of a similar but different trope, you know, similar in the same vein. This text specifically, three purportedly haunted forests in England and all of the ghostly tales and frightening legends associated with them, from sightings of apparitions to horrors of history, true crime, and even UFO sightings. We got to have a little bit of that for Hysteria 51. And literally everything in between, as if you watch this, and you'll learn, I'm sure, as we talk to George, from black-eyed children to hellhounds to everything. George is an interesting character. He's Bulgarian-born and has been revered for his unique visual style and carefully crafted atmospheres. Say that because he's got two other films, Hex and The Droving. They're feature-length films. They're not documentaries. And this is his first soiree into that. And he's been praised, as we said, for focus on complex theme and characters.
Would it kill you to get a porn director in here for once?
I mean,
depends. Why is he kink-shaming? I don't understand.
Right. We don't. I mean, this is porn. We do not kink shame on H51. It's in our bylaws. The truth is out there, but we won't kink shame here.
By bylaws, you mean BI laws, right?
that was a given. Thank you. George, he's appeared on a multitude of podcasts and interviews for independent filmmaking magazines, but now he's finally fulfilling what I can only imagine is a bucket list item for him. He's popping up on Hysteria 51.
Woo!
That just seems correct, doesn't it? That just like...
Mm-hmm. Die happy now. You kind of sounds like a veiled threat.
Die happy. That sounds like a Die Hard 7.
Too soon.
Didn't think about that. That one wasn't on purpose.
George is an exciting new talent covering the exact stuff we love here at H51. So keep your eye open, your third eye, open for all his future endeavors. But today, we talk all things Sideworld Haunted Forests of England. And we'll catch up with George right after this break on Hysteria 51.
Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they designed it for long-term retention, you know, if you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do. And then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition and it hears you. You get to use like the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we wanted to do this long term, and it's something that it works, you know. And we don't do long term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So, all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now, get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off, rosettastone.com/today. Do it today.
Nation, welcome back, and welcome in, more importantly, George Popoff. George, welcome to the show.
Oh, hey, guys. It's great to be here.
Good to have you.
So I'm in Chicago, and David is in Colorado, and where are you hitting us from?
I'm in Cheltenham, or as you guys would say, Cheltenham, which is about 2 hours away from London.
I love it. Or as you would mispronounce, is what you meant to say.
Is no, that 2 hours west or north, or what direction?
Northwest.
Northwest. Say. Okay.
But I used to live in Colorado for about a year, by the way.
What part?
Yeah, so I was in like Vail County. I was working there for a bit, so you know that was like Eagle County, I think, but it was close to Vail. That was beautiful, yeah. Rocky. Love it. Love
oh
it.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty nice out here.
Everybody was awesome. Like, I just love the people. Like, pretty, you know, mountain people are the coolest.
you get a fair mix of them around these parts. A lot of hippies, a lot of ranchers. It's a weird mix, and everybody just gets along. Seems like,
yeah, somehow, yeah. No, it's brilliant.
Meanwhile, I'm in corn country with corn people. Not quite the same.
Right.
Corn people. With the children.
With lots of children of the corn people.
Oh, yeah.
Well, George, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join us. And, you know, you've got your new documentary coming out, but it's not your first go around in filmmaking. You released, you had Hex previously in 2017, The Droving in 2020. Now you're in the documentary game. What drew you into filmmaking? Wanted you to go down this road?
I mean, it was sort of destined because, like,
the tattoo you were born with foretold this.
Yeah, that birthmark.
It's both a curse and a blessing, you know?
Right?
But you know, my grandfather was a theater director. My father is an artist. You know, it's just like a whole family of crazies, really. And when you're surrounded by all the different arts, I guess I'm just a greedy bastard who goes like, what can I do that incorporates all of these things at the same time? It's like, oh, the film can do that. It's like, brilliant.
Well, so that's awesome though, because you had a background that was so, you had an outlet for art. You know, a lot of people would say, mom, dad, I'm going to be a filmmaker. And they go over my dead body.
Yeah.
It sounds like nice that your family's like, well, it's about damn time.
Yeah. I think they were a little bit worried because they know it's not very easy, but right. At the same time, they just knew it was inevitable. So it's like, well, I guess that's what it is. It's like when you have vampirism or something. It's like, well, you know, we've got to teach the next.
We're going to make the best out of it.
Kind of kin. I'll do it.
Well, that's awesome. Elephant in the room, so to speak. What's it like making a movie during a pandemic? Because David here has a little bit of a background in that. I'm sure it's just a blast for you, isn't it? It's got to be different than your previous ones.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, we ended up being quite lucky because when my second feature, The Droving, was coming out, we've already shot and made everything, and it was released, you know, in 2020, just when the pandemic started.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we everybody else was, you know, kind of struggling, and it was, you know, quite difficult for filmmakers because a lot of, you know, great projects got canceled. But we just had a film come out and people were just staying at home watching. So that was good.
The stars aligned sometimes.
Oh, yeah. when it came to Sideworld, we just found a gap where the restrictions were a bit, you know, not as bad. And because we're mainly filming in the forest, and when you're shooting for a documentary, it's a lot of a smaller crew and you don't really have actors or anything. So that made it a lot easier.
Yeah. Mm. This is not, you know, you have no actors in this. It's all,
voice actors.
Yeah. Other than voice actors. So that had to have been at least a breath of fresh air as far as not having to worry about that in that time. But in talking about this, your previous work, you touched on, you know, the spooky or the folk horror tales. Mm-hmm. Now you're doing this, which we'll get into the whole, but this is about these haunted forests. What was your interest, or what brought you into the paranormal? As in, was this something you've been interested in your whole life, kind of like being in the arts and filmmaking, or was there an aha moment you're like, I want to do this?
Oh, I think they came hand in hand, to be honest, because maybe even before the filmmaking, before that came to me, I kind of the X-Files was my favorite show on TV. Like,
yeah,
as I was growing up, probably my parents let me watch it at kind of an irresponsibly young age.
Which is great. Right? Yeah, I like that.
I just love the books and all the different stories about, you know, aliens and Bigfoot and ghosts and all the different stuff, and I love to look at it as objectively as possible, but I just love the stories as well, even without thinking about what's real, what isn't. It just you know, I enjoy a good story, so that goes well with the filmmaking. But then where there's like a lot of it where it's connected to real events or people who you know experience things, you start kind of more scientifically thinking about it. I mean, like, well, how those two things marry, like the fact and the fiction.
Did you have a lot of folklore that you heard, you know, growing up, or was was it mostly like the X-Files stuff from pop culture and things that got you more interested in the things?
Well, both really. I mean, because I'm Bulgarian, I grew up in Bulgaria, and less than the UK, really. It's a country that's still kind of retains a lot of its, you know, there's still parts where there are not that many people live, you know, so there's a lot of interesting stories about where you hear an old granny in a village in somewhere describe perfectly a UFO and aliens as if they're coming out of, like, you know, Close Encounters, but she's never seen a movie in her life beyond like Gone with the Wind, you know, back in the 30s or something.
Kind of holds a little bit more weight to it, right?
Wait a second. So definitely, I think growing up in Bulgaria, and also there's a lot of just interesting European folklore. I love all the mixture of different stories from all around the continent, and there is a lot of the crossovers, and there is a lot of things that you know relate to fairy tales, and you start like, you know, connecting the threads. And you know, be surprised how many like different stories are connected. And you know, the you know, I mentioned Bigfoot earlier. I mean, every continent has its own way before the people from these continents met. So
yeah, it reminds me of stories in the UK, the British Isles, and things of the Green Man, Cernunnos, you know, and Celtic lore and stuff, which you could probably tie to more Slavic tales of the Leshy, you know, things like that. So it is interesting how it just is. It takes on a different flavor depending on the region you're in over there.
No, it really does. It really does. It's interesting how every culture spins it, you know, their own way. But also the amount of things that relate to the, you know, every culture has its form of a dragon, and you know, maybe that can be explained by every culture. You know, did a little bit of digging. They saw an alien. Sorry, not alien, but a dinosaur skeleton.
No, we'll go with alien. That's fine.
Or an alien dinosaur. That's what you want. And they went to explain it, and like maybe it was like, oh, it must have wings as well. I mean, like, might as well just make the most badass interpretation of what this like big lizard is.
Right.
Well, you gotta suss out how they get from one part of the continent to the other, and you know, wings are the.
Yeah,
or you. I guess you could just become an ancient dinosaur theorist.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I think there's plenty of those. You know, but trying to keep it somewhat grounded in reality. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of grounded in reality, this is your first major documentary, as compared to like your feature films that you did before. What's your, or I guess, how is the approach different for a documentary than a feature? Was it harder? Did you find it, or was it easier, or was it just completely, you know, a different take for you?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. It is different. I mean, I've never been that much of a, you know, my interest in documentary in terms of making it has only always been like in just certain aspects. I mean, I've never really thought about it that way. It's always going to be with me. It was always about telling a story, and usually a story that I've made up. And then we sit down with Jonathan and we write them. And but the thing is, there were so many stories that I was potentially interested in that I just know that were from folklore or from like horror stories or plenty of other legends and myths that I'm interested in. I just know that I would need like 5 lifetimes to tell them. And right. They're probably don't deserve like, you know, 90 minutes or more. So we were thinking of like, how can we get to tell stuff we were excited about without really like making a feature film based on every single one of those things? And because I already have an interest in both paranormal and history and legends and myths and all that kind of stuff, we just thought that putting it all under one series of documentaries that we call Sideworld, and then every time focusing on the different theme that we're interested in, but telling multiple stories within it, seemed like the best choice.
So this is number one of a series that you're hoping to put out. That's awesome. Yeah,
that's where the colon comes into
play. Yeah,
Sideworld. Right. Sideworld is our name of all the documentaries we're going to make, and the first one's called Haunted Forests of England, and we're in, you know, actually right in the middle of making the second one.
Well, talking about that, you got Wiseman's Wood, you've got Kenneck Chase, mm-hmm. and Epping Forest. So they're the backdrop for this documentary. And you've talked about how, you know, you grew up in Bulgaria, and there's all these different folklores and myths and legends and paranormal over there. And you drilled in down to England and its forests, specifically these three. What drew you to them? Why was this your choice for the backdrop of your first documentary?
Yeah, I mean, I've been here for the last 10 years, and while making the other films like Hex and the Droving, as you know, as British films, I was always drawn to, because I still keep some of my outsider view from not being, you know, native for most of my life. And I think that's an important bit of why it makes it so interesting to me. I find it difficult to talk about things that are very close to me. They seem kind of difficult to decipher. I need a psychologist, probably, most likely a psychiatrist, but, you know, to really delve into that. I think they come through the films anyway, but it's not my job to figure it out. But I find it easier to, when you see something a bit more objectively, to see it from the side and kind of try to explore. It doesn't matter if it's a mountain or a forest or something visual that you're seeing or experience as a place, or the stories that you meet from the people. It to me is exotic, is exciting, the way that maybe someone who grew up in that area, if constantly just kind of build drilled into their mind. So these forests seem to be full of stories and lore, and I love their looks and the atmosphere that I can craft with it. Because with Hex and the Droving, there were films that I was very much trying to imbue a lot of the places where we're shooting them anyway, and make that part of the cinematic language. And even though, and that kind of answers a bit of your previous question, like what's the difference, is that I try to make it as least different as possible from how I approach, you know, a narrative feature film, where I still do care about the atmosphere. I still do care about, you know, the emotion a person's going through while watching them, because I think there's too many documentaries where you just know what you're going to get in terms of your format. You're going to have, like, mm-hmm. the experts going to cut in and say something that it's absolutely obvious that we just heard now, but in a more eloquent language, you know, and then he's going to cut to something else. That you just know how they work these days. And not that the sad about documentaries are anything too different or unfamiliar for the viewer. They're still going to get the fullness of the stories and us exploring the lore. But I still care about... as you just being there and experiencing the atmosphere of the place. And we care a lot about the music and the visuals and the colors as well. So it just those four spoke in a way that they were just a prime subject for the first one.
Speaking of the different forests, Wiseman's Woods was the first one he tackled. I had no idea that one of the big things that they talked about there is the Wisthounds. I had no idea that the Hound of the Baskervilles was based off that, which is something that probably everyone's heard of, with, you know, the being as prevalent as it is. But they also hold Black-Eyed Child, the Old Crocker, Weird Monks, Druids, all this stuff. That was a really crazy forest, and you broke a lot of that down. What was your favorite aspect of that one? Because that one had a ton of things. Did you have a favorite? I know it's like, you know, what's your favorite kid? But
oh yeah, I mean, like in Wiseman's in particular. I mean, it's first of all, it's such a strange forest to be in because it just looks right out of a fairy tale.
Yeah, it's, you said it used to be much bigger. It's all rocks and they're like moss mm-hmm. covered, and there's hardly any life there, animal life, because it's so hard to be in the area because it's hard to navigate.
Absolutely. I mean, it's in the grander place called Dartmoor, which kind of, very, very English sounding, you know, like you have it has this spooky atmosphere, and you have this semi marshland that permeates the place. And the Wiseman's Wood is just like this small woodland pocket that remained, like you said, from an ancient forest there. And you start to think like, well, there must be some reason why that has remained. And, obviously, we go into the more supernatural possible explanations of it. But I love that. I love the way that, like you described it, that's just the view of this place that's remained from an ancient time, and possibly it could be protected by an old, you know, benevolent and malevolent forest spirit, you know. Its connections also, I think one of my favorite bits of that story is how the story of the huntsman, who appears alongside the Wisehounds and the Spectral Dogs, this kind of badass, you know, dark figure, seems also that could have maybe inspired parts of the Nazgul for Tolkien. Someone also as well that is related to all these legends about the Wild Hunt and everything. And mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of the Witcher games and TV show. And that also explores that, which is a very Slavic thing as well, and but comes from Nordic legend. So yeah, I love all these connections that come with it.
Man, there you know some of these stories. You wonder if you know if they were made up or they just made up to keep people out of the woods, or is there, you know, what parts of them are real? But man, you were talking about the Huntsman, and one of the spookiest ones was the guy who got drunk and was like walking through the woods, and he ran to the Huntsman. And he's like, "Hey, Huntsman, give me some food." And he throws him a bag, and it's his own child in there. I was like, "What the hell? That is that is some crazy shit right there."
Full on, yeah. Doesn't mess around, the Huntsman. Yeah.
Right, like here you go, chow down, man. It was crazy, you know, and it is such a England, for whatever reason, has a lot more history than we do here as far as, you know, being settled in a lot of ways. And there is kind of a, you know, kind of feeling to a lot of it more than some of the places here. And this place, just with all the photos, like you said, it really felt like it captured the place just looks creepy.
It does. I mean, like you get such a mix of emotions when you're there. It's so peaceful and so serene, but at the same time, you're right. The kind of the lack of any substantial forest life, it just makes it feel exactly as if you're on the threshold on some sort of underworld, and you're just expecting something to open, you know, a portal between all these mossy rocks and druidic signs, you know, and you're going to appear somewhere else. It's just truly enchanting.
Well, not to be outdone by the Wisman's Woods with his Wisthounds and the Huntsman and everything. You had the Kinnock Chase, had the Pig Man, not to be confused with Man Bear Pig, sadly.
Oh, yeah. Could be. Who knows?
Super serial. It seemed filled with creatures like that. You had, you know, the werewolves and this and then the other, but also that one had UFO sightings as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Kinnock Chase is a place where there's a lot of things that are related to different periods, but it was the one that it seemed to be quite you know, influenced by a lot of stuff in the 20th century, because there was a German POW camp there as well. And that's in some ways you can kind of explain some of the pigman stories of maybe the soldiers were trying to scare the Germans into escaping from the camp because there is a pigman running around. But
or they're doing experiments on them, you know, and this is one of them. They're doing
experiments on them because there was, you know, we went to the graveyards that are there and the memorials for all the German soldiers who died there. And there's quite a lot for a POW camp. You know, you almost feel like, okay, what happened here? And there's too many stories about, especially later on in the 20th century, about UFO sightings there that, you know, seem to be around all these TV towers and all places. They say TV towers, but there's a long, you know, explanation to how, like, maybe there was something more going under them with the British intelligence.
Yeah.
So, there is a story, you know, there is a long history in UFO sightings around forests in England anyway, one of the most famous being Rendlesham Forest.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we've covered that on here, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a doozy. Kinnock Chase is a prime example of it.
I like you said, too, it had a lot of 20th century ties. Another one that you talked about in here was the Black Eyed Child. That's been something that's newer since like the 1980s. It was like a female cries in the woods and she's like 6 or 7, but it was spooky. She had dark hair. And when you get the people would get up to her, she's like, "I can't see." And she'd turn and she just had like missing eyes. That's spooky crap right there. No, thank you. That's I filled my pants and I need to go home kind of stuff.
I know. And the kind of one of the scariest thing about the Black Eyed Child is like, we're going into the stories that people say in that area and the possible explanations behind it. But the thing is, it's not just an English phenomenon. Like, you see those appearances around the world, and I've actually heard quite a few tellings of that story of eyewitnesses coming from the States as well, because God knows you guys have some of the most vast and beautiful national parks there, and that's not a place where I want to be lost and have a kid like that, you know. Or,
right.
Up here, because here you could probably run for 20 minutes and you find a house, but not so much.
You run for a few days. And yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I wouldn't want one of those things in a Starbucks. Like, that's awful.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Are we just
that's
talking about true. Children or black-eyed children? I'm not sure which here.
D, all of the above.
Right.
I mean, the most creepy thing, you know, you hear black-eyed kids, and it's like they still have eyeballs. They're just all black. No, man, this thing has no eyes. It's just sockets, and that's nightmare fuel.
Yeah. Speaking of nightmare fuel, too, this was – and monsters, you had the missing girls from the 60s in here. And speaking of real monsters, you know, human, this guy was – I don't know if you want to use the term serial killer, but –
Oh yeah,
was killing girls, and you know, his own brother turned him in before the third girl was killed, but they didn't have evidence, and it was the largest manhunt, you said, in England history. Search for the person. Yeah. Hundreds of people were out looking for these girls that were missing, and sadly, they had perished. It's just another thing that adds to this whole feel for some of these forests that you have. Yeah. Anytime something like that happens, it's just like, ugh, man.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's yeah, that story kind of, we're talking about the blend of, you know, fictional horror and factual horror. And then, you know, maybe we have our doubts about, you know, which one of the legends is true, but that's something that definitely happened. And possibly to some degree, you know, in the documentary, definitely look and address that is connected to the sightings of the black-eyed girls there, you know.
Yeah.
But even without that is something that, you know, happened and could happen, and it's something I learned with making horror films like Hex and The Droving and this as well. It's like it always just circles back to the humans being pieces of shit, really. You know, it's
yeah,
like,
yeah. That's a constant that you can always rely on.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the yeah.
Absolutely. Speaking of human pieces of shit, I was interested in the part when you got to Dick Turpin, which was a figure that I was I've been fascinated by, but it was kind of disturbing to hear that. And this was for listeners, this Dick Turpin's a famous highwayman from back in, what was it, the 18th century or so?
Yeah.
And he almost had like a Jesse James, you know, from the States kind of feel to him, almost a Robin Hood, although he didn't really care about anybody but himself, it seemed like. And it's a fascinating figure, but I was disturbed to hear about him killing dogs. I'm a big dog fan.
Right.
And that was, yeah, that was, I was like, oh, Dick Turpin is actually a Dick Turpin. Like,
literally. No, absolutely. I mean, it is disappointing. Like when you have these legends and we follow, because like there's a lot of you know, figures from history that we go like, oh, that sounds badass. But the reason why it sounds badass now, why it was horrifying back in the day, mm-hmm. and when you really look into it, you know, they're just some figures. It's not justified to wear the T-shirt, you know, because when you really go into the details of it. Yeah, a lot of these people did exactly what they want, and that might sound romantic now, but it's probably the reason why we have laws in the first place.
yeah, right.
So yeah, it's an important part of these things to sometimes demystify something that it's seen as a better than it actually was.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, keeping with the mystifying and kind of the death hole theme, the Epping Forest. Mm. Was the one, the third one was teeming with ghosts, and not to be outdone, Pawn That Makes You Commit Suicide. So that's fun. one of the things you're talking about, the first person, one of the people is like, it knows me, it's calling. That's terrifying, and people have been looking for this pond forever. Should we really know where a suicide pond exactly is my big question.
I honestly don't know what's more terrifying, to know that it is there and for it to not know which one it is. It's like the Zodiac killer of places, you know, because you know it's out there. You have like some really good suspects, but no one will ever be able to point out exactly which one it is. And there's something, so like the lack of finality, the lack of resolution there, there's something so terrifying about that.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to say like, all right, let's put some tape around this thing and just like never go, that you cannot do that unless you do that with every single pond in Epping Forest.
I mean, that's too, it just with like the, we talked about the girls being killed. This had a lot of illegal crime activity, local crime syndicates, they would dump bodies, they do things there. That really just adds to this whole, considering a place that's haunted outside of the whole pond, you know, and things like that. It really is something that I find fascinating, is people seek to understand everything. And I don't know why we want to, and me included, reported anything that's reportedly evil or beyond our world. We want to understand it. Why is that? Why is that human nature? Or why is it our nature to do like you did, to go out there and explore and to tell the story? Because I'm glad it is, you know?
No, definitely. I think it is, you're absolutely right that it is part of human nature of no matter how dangerous something is, like there is this inane desire that it has to be understood. And I think it's exactly that. I think there is like a purely biological motivation that you fear what you don't understand, and in order to, for us to persevere, we need to conquer our fears, and the only way to do it is you have to make it more relatable, you have to make it more understandable. So we have to approach as like, I'm you know, we're afraid of the deep waters, we have to see what's down there, because the thought of never knowing is terrifying. Same thing goes with space, same thing goes with ghosts or Bigfoot or all these things that we're trying to, whatever can be terrifying, it will become less terrifying if we know what it is. You know, we're calling monsters because we don't have the name for the species yet, or it's something that transcends its species. Like when we call a human monsters, like he's not human anymore because he's that terrifying that it's not even relatable.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, in a strange way, we have to brave the dangers to make them feel less dangerous to us.
Yeah, I get that. You know, not humanize, but to understand is a powerful weapon, you know, for people.
Yeah.
One of the other places that I thought was interesting in there that I also had heard of before was Hangman's Hill. The hangman was supposed to be an executioner, haunts there, but it's a place where cars seem to roll uphill. And that's one of those things I've seen people that where they put you know, cars there, and it's like an optical illusion, you know, that maybe, you know, it looks like it's going uphill, but really it's going downhill. But oh no, people say it's the hangman pulling people to their death. That's awesome to me that, you know, how things like that, you wonder which came first, the story or the illusion or maybe it really is the hangman, who knows?
I know what you mean. I mean, it's you know, we mentioned because it seems so ludicrous that the hangman's pulling cars up the hill. But I wonder what was happening there before cars were invented. Was the horse just kind of going backwards or something? The cart pulling it.
We have a hill like that here in America, and it looks like it. And they say that these children were killed there, so they push the car across the road to not stall. I even watched these shows where they put like flour on the back of the car looking for children's handprints and stuff like that. You know,
that is pretty spooky.
Yeah. Right. Well, the whole area is. Well, area, England, the whole, but all these forests are terrifying, and they're each very different. That's what I thought was cool is one is more of a folklore. One is more of a newer, one is more of a ghost. That was really fun that you found three distinctly terrifyingly haunted places, haunted being, you know, a catch-all term, that were so different.
Yeah, no, thanks. I mean, yeah, we absolutely tried to do that to add that variety, because it seems, you know, when you have the variety in stories, you can show the connections between them, how something can run from like ancient history to medieval history to recent history to modern day, and see all the connections between, and that something can be, you know, mythologized very easily through the periods as well. And something can seem more like a fairy tale, but the next time we're talking about a serial killer and all these things can connect. Depends on how people interpret that. And how, as we said, people are trying to get familiarized with something that could be terrifying.
Absolutely. Well, you've got these others planned. What's next? What can we expect from you?
Well, I mean, we're really excited about the Cyborg project, and the next one that we're making right now, I can go as far as saying that is going to be based around sea and ocean related myths, and horror stories, nice. And legends.
Very fun.
And so we're going from the forests to the sea, and I just finished filming some of the last shots coming from places around here in the. Oh yeah, I got to tell you, we're going to go even further with this one because there is great variety there, and it's just what I've learned in terms of the relationship between humans and the ocean is a very strange and multifaceted one of both incredible love and extraordinary hatred and danger.
Amen. So.
Are you staying around the UK again with that one?
Yes. I mean, like, we'll probably stay around the UK until we exhaust sort of the local.
Oh, so you'll be there forever.
I was just going to say, good luck. Good luck with that. Yeah,
like, until I stop being lazy and we take the plane somewhere else. But no, I definitely want to do more around Europe as a whole and go, you know, because I know some local Bulgarian stuff, and I definitely want to do the States as well. It just, that seems like another complete different vibe. But we always try to connect the stories when they go worldwide as well, when there's something that's being seen around many places. But there's a lot of documentaries that sort of do like a catch-all subject matter when they just mention the most famous ones around the world. And I feel like I've watched all of these by now. So we're trying to bring in at the beginning the subject matter and get all the fans of that particular sort of paranormal subgenre, if you want to call it, but then go into a specific story that you might not have heard as much about as the most famous examples from around the world.
Well, that was great because these were, you know, local stories that I wasn't familiar with, you know, and these forests. So now that has to do with also my geographical location, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to learn and to see, and also to make ties to, well, I've heard of this, I've heard of that, I haven't heard of that, or that reminds me of things that I'd heard, like you said, because a lot of times stories have ties to other things or are similar or, you know, so that was a lot of fun. If our listeners want to watch this, where's the best place to find your work?
Well, at the moment in the U.S., we have Cyberworld both on Prime Video to buy and rent, on YouTube Prime buy and rent as well, and then you can watch it on Tubi.
Great. Well, we will have links to all that for everyone, so you can find as well as your websites and your work. George, thank you so much for doing this, and we look forward to everything else that's coming out in Cyberworld and anything else you do, because it was a lot of fun, and it was a refreshing take on looking at things that I was not familiar with. So,
thank you, guys. It was my pleasure, absolutely, and keep doing what you're doing.
Well, same to you, and hopefully next time we'd love to have you back to talk the watery mysteries of England.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to do that. We'll have to go through those as well and see how much more fucked up things there are as well.
Right. I'm going to go with a lot. That's my scientific number. A lot.
That's a good one.
Well, thank you so much, George. And we're going to go to break. We'll be back with more Hysteria 51.
No eyes. So George was great. He's great to talk to.
I can't see. Please help me. I can't see.
I'd be like, you're shit out of luck, kid. Beat it.
Well, shit out of that before you went in the fucking woods as a little girl, you son of a bitch. Deuces.
You are incredibly angry at this child for not having eyeballs.
Probably the tiny meat sack's own fucking fault.
That's right, C-Bot. It is her own fucking fault.
George is great. He's great to talk to. I think he's got a good attitude about this stuff, you know.
Yeah, and he's a from Bulgaria, living in England. So he's kind of been all over there and knows a lot of these weird stories of Europe. And water is terrifying in and of itself. So the next one I'm looking forward to, because we didn't really get into that, but like you said, there's very little of it that's been explored, and people are just innately terrified of the ocean. I don't know if you know this, but shit eats you in the ocean, or the water is a bigger anything.
Fish. Yeah. There's so much lore to pull from in the British Isles. And he was talking about he'll wait till it runs out. And I'm like, literally, dude, like, it will never run out.
I know.
There's so much. You could go up to Scotland and have you'd be set for, you know, 5 years probably with films. You could go over to Ireland and be set for 10 years. Like, it's the earth will burn like a crispy piece of bacon before he runs out of things to talk about.
We've reached absolute zero, but I hadn't even gotten to Scotland yet. Yeah.
Right.
It's a lot of folklore is, well, I mean, look at the folklore we have here.
No.
Go to your local little place. No, I will not. I'll ask you to not bring that up. You know, it's just an amazing amount of folklore that we have here, and then they have a richer, further history. Now, they don't as far as the folklore of, like, the Native Americans and stuff that are here, but I'm saying we as in the offshoots of the Europeans that are living over here. It's fascinating. It's fascinating, and it's also fascinating to look at these things and look at the – I started to say this during the interview. Look at some of the similarities between stories that we have. A lot of the same stuff is told and a lot of different stuff.
Well, you think about it. I mean, that makes complete sense because we are descendants of those people that came over here with those stories, you know, and they came from everywhere. You know, you've got Dutch stories in New York with Sleepy Hollow and stuff,
which kind of felt like the Huntsman a little bit, you know, his spectral, either a spectral horse or a skeleton horse. He had a head, but he was evil. But it felt a lot like the Huntsman.
And he even mentioned it when he said he threw him that Hessian sack.
Yeah,
right. And that's you know, the Hessian is one of the legends of Sleepy Hollow. And, but you know, you've got German folklore over here. You've got Irish folklore over here. It's amazing what all has been brought and how it's evolved. French, you know, French folklore, of course. And it's evolved over here. It has taken on a life of its own. It has combined with the Native American lore that's already been here. It's wild how this stuff evolves and where it comes from and the origins of it.
I think one of my favorite folklores that doesn't get enough attention is French. It's the story of an evil raping skunk that patrols the streets looking for our cats.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's called the evil Le Pew.
It's called the Rue Le Pew.
This is abuse just being forced to listen to this dumb shit.
Oh my gosh.
Oh man.
What tarnation.
Sometimes, you know, when you want to entertain your kids, you just throw on a rapey cartoon. You know, it was a different time. It was a different time. Jesus Christ. Anyway, Nation, you guys should definitely check this out. It's a lot of fun. We have all the links for you. Fun might not be this spooky.
It's spooky.
Alarming. Not alarming.
It's a bit of a slow burn. Like, I think, you know, you have patience and be ready to absorb a lot of information. This is a good, like, this is really good on delivering information and the folklore through storytelling. And it's got the visuals to back it up.
Yeah, a lot of visuals. Great. And it's like three parts. The first part, each part is its own forest, which is kind of nice.
But don't go in expecting, like, a, you know,
it's
Rock.
No Speed 2 Cruise Control, I'll tell you that right now.
don't go in expecting Jason Statham to, like, take you through these forests.
Jason Statham taking you through a forest is, well, that's scary in and of itself, but, yeah, that's a different story. What is your favorite folklore from Europe? We've got so many Europeans over there that listen to the show. What is the story that maybe he didn't touch on that was like, oh, that should be its own documentary? I'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
And while you're telling us things, we're going to be doing more Blurry Hysteria episodes. We'd love for you guys to tell us, what are some weird news stories that you want us to cover? And we got an easy way for you to tell us. You can email us weird@hysteria51.com. W-E-I-R-D at hysteria51.com. Send us the link. And if we use your story, we'll even give you a shout on the show. So make sure you tell us your name and anything you want. And as long as it doesn't suck, we will use it. So be looking for a lot more of those coming up on the show. And also, you can tell us if you don't want to send us an email. You can talk to us through a bunch of other channels. Facebook.com/Hysteria51Pod. That's our regular page. You can talk to us through Hysteria Nation, our fan page. Just go to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation. Patreon. All these episodes are going to go up on Patreon first with zero ads. Hey. And they'll probably come out on the regular feed a few weeks later. So patreon.com/hysteria51pod. Voicemail, two ways to leave them. You can call us 773-669-7277. Again, that's 773-669-7277. Or you can go to hysteria51.com, click on the microphone on the bottom right, and leave us a voicemail that way.
If you like what we do, tell a friend. If you hate what we do, tell an enemy.
Hey, you're going to hate this. Hi, I also hate you. I just want you to know that.
I hate you. You know what you'll really like? I'm doing you a solid here. It's a gesture of friendship. Listen to Hysteria 51. I'm not going to tell him I hate Hysteria 51. I want him to hate something too.
And if you hate yourself, listen to Blurry Photos. What's going on over there?
Segway.
Lots of hating. Yeah, I'm gearing up for the next episode, which is an interview with a fella who wrote a book on fog and mists.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Fog and mist. So he didn't even specify which. It's both of them.
He didn't. He tried to get them all, but he missed.
No. Stop it.
Oh, where's my buttum? Oh. No, to see, but don't
kill. I told you to have that ready. That was in my contract.
Man. Or I could have used this one.
It's the same. I'll take it. I'll allow it.
Yeah. So anything else going on, or just kind of?
No, that's pretty much keep it on, keep it on. You know, Quiz Bang's keep it on. We got some fun group episodes coming up, and some bonus episodes. We recorded a James Bond themed bonus episode. That'll be fun. So yeah.
No, Mr. Bond.
Check him out.
I expect you to guess. I don't know. I'm not good. I'm not even good at trivia. It's fine. I'm good at trivia until you put me on the spot. Like I'm from home watching Jeopardy. I'm like, fucking idiots. I knew that.
Right.
Fucking idiots.
Annie puts out Lego picks with trivia questions for the show, and one of the latest ones was, what is Goldfinger's first name?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of people were had some pretty good guesses, like Barzov, and like I forget what that. But I was hoping someone would come out with Smelma. They did not.
What was the one that I had an answer for recently? You're like, what is the official animal of something? Oh, what was the official animal of April Fool's Day, right?
Oh, the French. Yeah.
What did I say? Well, I said...
yuck, the practical joking ocelot.
I can't believe that wasn't right. If it wasn't, we need to just make a change, because that just feels right in your bones, doesn't it?
I'm sure they have a really fancy French way of saying all that too.
It's Pepe Le Pew. With that said, I've been Brent.
I've been David.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. We'll be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand joint.